CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, executive editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, we have some casting news to share about Days of Our Lives. Jean-Paul Lavoisier, who played Philip Kyriakos from 2015 to 2016, and One Life to Live's Rex before that, is headed back to Salem next month. So I assume this will somehow be a part of however they're wrapping up Victor's story. As we know, Victor's portrayer, John Aniston, passed away in November of last year. And with the show taping more than 6 months ahead, the timing would play out correctly if that's what this story is. And I, for one, am absolutely looking forward to his return. I think John Paul is such a dynamic actor, and they really didn't take advantage of that during his first run. So we'll see what's going to happen here. We are also going to welcome back Cassie DePaiva as Eve. Next week, Eve is going to cross paths with Harris, played by Steve Burton, at Bayview Sanitarium. Now, what I love about this story is that Harris and Eve did have a past when Steve was first on the show in 1988, and that will be addressed in their scenes. So Cassie tells us she watched those scenes from the 80s to get a sense of their relationship. Charlotte Ross played the character then and tried to stay true to the history. But ultimately, Cassie loved coming back and said it was like a family reunion.
We also have some sad real-life news to report. Nick Benedict, who played the iconic role of Phil Brent on All My Children in the 1970s, in addition to playing Michael Scott, the photographer who made the grave mistake of sleeping with Victor's wife, Julia, on Y&R and wound up as Victor's hostage, as well as Curtis Reed, Kate's abusive ex-husband on Days, passed away this month at the age of 76. You know, those are like three characters who really made a lasting mark on all of their shows. And we certainly send our deepest condolences to his loved ones. Now, one of the storylines on Days that has most gotten fans talking concerns the pregnancies of Nicole and Sloan. And that saga takes a big turn this upcoming week.
It does indeed. I mean, we will see Sloan steal a page from Sammy's playbook and alter the DNA results to make it appear that EJ is the father of Nicole's baby when it's really Eric. So this is a huge story, which will obviously have many repercussions for months to come. And it just feels like a true old school Days as well as soap opera story. You know, these are the kind of tales that work no matter when you tell them, in my opinion. And what makes this one more intriguing to me is that while Sammy was the paternity test switcher, Nicole has her own history of baby swapping, as we all remember. So the 2008-2009 Sidnapping story, as it was affectionately referred to on set, when Nicole switched Sammy and EJ's baby Sydney for Chad and Mia's daughter Grace, who ultimately died. I mean, there was so much drama to be mined from that, and I'm hoping we see history repeat itself here.
Yeah, I certainly don't mind a show borrowing from its own playbook when it has the potential to create so much drama, you know, so many ripples across the canvas. So someone whose own checkered past may be coming back to haunt them on GH is the beloved character of Anna, who this coming week is forced to wrestle with the possibility that the recent shooting at the Metro Court may have been evidence that someone from the WSB is trying to rub her out. So this is just the beginning of a brewing mystery for the character. And I have to say, thus far, I am absolutely loving the scenes between Anna and Sunny and Dante. There's certainly more to come on that front, but I think it's really smart of the show to play those three together. I've talked to both Finola Hughes, Anna, and Maurice Bernard, Sunny, very recently, and they are both extremely jazzed about it as well. So that's a story I'm definitely keeping my eye on as one to watch.
Oh, me too. Now, our guest today is knee deep in the drama in Genoa City. It's Vale Bloom, who is back as Heather. So let's check in with her and see how it's all going. Hi, Vale.
Hi.
How you doing?
Doing pretty well today. I'm very happy to be chatting with you too.
Well, we are thrilled to be chatting with you. We have been trying to make this happen, so we are very excited that it finally is. Yeah. So we're going to go back to where you were born, which is Boston, but you grew up in Connecticut and Florida. So when you think of going back home, does one of those locations resonate with you over the others?
Probably Connecticut, actually. There's something about, you know, fields and trees and the smell of the grass. Rural living.
Yeah. Well, tell us about your family, the family you grew up in.
Okay. So I had a pretty unconventional but wonderful family life and upbringing. So I was born in Boston. Everyone seems to be from Boston, but a lot of us ended up in Connecticut. So all Massachusetts, if it's not Boston, it's like Saugus or Worcester, or you know what I mean, like somewhere nearby or Newton. But we all ended up in Connecticut, and my mom and my dad got divorced when I was about two. And so I moved to Connecticut with my grandparents and my mom. Loved it. Best thing ever. So special to my heart. My grandparents were super, super, super involved in my upbringing. And I actually named my daughter after my grandpa. So my grandpa's name was Charlie, and my daughter's name is Charlie.
Love
so, that. Yeah. So Barbara and Charlie and my mom and I, we all lived together. And then my mom remarried when I was about 10 to an amazing man who's my dad. And, you know, I've had two dads, and my stepdad actually adopted me. So it's really interesting to play certain roles, specifically Heather, that really explores, you know, non-blood related family, and it really taking on that role just as the same as you would with biological family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Well, mm-hmm. What were you like growing up in terms of your personality and your interests?
Quiet. Guys, I was so shy. It's the biggest irony that I ended mm-hmm. up in front of the camera or acting. I was terrified. I was so paranoid about ever being famous. I never used to even write my name on my return address, because you know, back in the day we used to mail, you know, letters. Uh-huh. I would never put my name. I never wanted anyone to know anything about me, where I was, where I lived. I liked to, I was not the class clown. I was so, I went to middle school with people that didn't realize I was in their class until eighth grade as we were graduating. Like, no, I didn't transfer in this year.
That is so hilarious. Well, after high school, you mean, clearly you did well, because you went to Princeton University, where you majored in architecture. So that's such an interesting major to me. Did your interest in architecture sprout there, or did you go to Princeton intending to study it?
I went to Princeton intending to study it. I look back at my notebooks when I was a kid, as early as like 6 years old. And it's not pictures of flowers and people and faces and animals. It's literally elevations of houses. It's just the outside of houses, beautiful homes, my dream home, just pages and pages and books of this. And then when I got into middle school, I was always drawing things to scale and doing floor plans. So I always wanted to do architecture, and then clearly I threw it all the way and began acting, but you know, there was a pivot. My parents were thrilled about that after paying for architecture school at Princeton. All happy now.
Well, you were involved in dance at Princeton, but had you done any acting?
Okay. Funnily enough, I was very involved in dance, and it was a very avant-garde company that told a lot of social narrative, anything socially relevant, whether that's something medical or political, we would tell it through dance. I got my first acting experience because of architecture. So my roommate, she was some intense physics major, and she shifted gears and switched to visual arts with a focus on film. And she needed to make a silent film about an architect. So she begged me to just, you know, let her come in, watch me, film me, do my drafting board, and then just think and act and feel like an architect, but there'd be a camera on me. So that was my first acting experience because it seemed like an easy leap, not really one at all, you know? And in the student film community, that went over very well. And then I started doing a bunch of student films.
Okay. So I'm trying to square away what we've learned about you thus far, studious, a little shy, a little anti the spotlight, with the fact that while you were in school, you landed on the pages of Maxim in a contest that you placed third in, the Hometown Hotties contest. So how did that come about?
Friends in architecture. They thought it would be hilarious and got a kick out of it. And my friend Giselle, who is, you know, probably my closest friend in the department and at school, she was always my biggest fan and thought I was, I don't know, super cute and hot. And she took photos of when I was doing commercial modeling just to make money. And she submitted them to Maxim without telling me. And then I actually got called and like it went further. And then I was faced with, do I do it or not do it? And so I did it.
Well, what was that call like to get? Were you like, who? What?
Yeah. I mean, it was a long time ago, but I remember being slightly angry, slightly thankful, mostly just surreal and like, what the heck? This is like, it's already in motion. And then everyone around me at Princeton wanted me to do it. So they were all super supportive. They thought it was the coolest thing ever. You know, they're like, give us some street cred. We got some pretty people here.
Right. Well, did your experience on campus change after the magazine came out?
I think it was my senior year, maybe, when it came out. My experience didn't change because I think like locally, or, you know, in our little community, there was already a band that had written about me and wrote the Veil Bloom song. And like, I, you know,
what?
I don't
know. What's the Veil Bloom song?
Punk band. It was just a student band. So I think, I mean, it was a really tight-knit, close, small community at Princeton. So we all knew each other anyway. And, you know, the good thing at Princeton is everyone is very supportive of each other. So they just celebrated the whole, they were entertained by the whole thing and thought it was great.
So was there like a moment for you where you were graduating, where it's like you could either go further along in architecture or you could try acting? Or did you know, when I get that diploma, I'm off to LA?
No, I didn't know, actually. And I think, just to sound really out there, I have so much Libra in my chart. I really wanted to try both and see how long I could entertain both options, probably somewhat unrealistically. But I actually got a part-time job at an architecture firm called Gensler. And that part-time job was like 45 hours a week. Because in architecture, it's like 80-hour weeks. And that's normal for not a lot of money. But I very naively thought to myself, okay, would I rather do 80-hour weeks in architecture or 80-hour weeks on set? And I thought, well, it's really, really tough, but I think I would pick being on set. And then I realized no one in this business works every week of the year, except when you're on a soap opera. Literally, it's the only job that you can work every week of the year. So that's cool, actually. But, you know, I think when I wasn't on the show, I was like, oh, you work like 6 weeks a year. You know what I mean? Right, and then the rest of it, you're like, what do I do with my life? So it wasn't really comparable. Like I, you know, mm-hmm. It didn't really need to compare it so literally. I worked also at a production company when I first moved out to California, and I was very part-time there. And then when I decided I didn't have freedom to audition at the architecture firm, I stopped the architecture and just focused on auditions and the production company. Mm-hmm.
So then tell us, how did your parents react? Like, so now you're not even doing any architecture.
I think that they stepped to pretty like heroically and the way you would hope parents to. I mean, they became very, very supportive to the point where I was like, I want to move home. And they're like, no, you can't do that because your dreams are to be on TV and film. You can't do that in Florida. They were in Florida at the point. And so they, I'm making a joke, but they were really supportive and they didn't make me feel guilty. They sort of wouldn't let me come home at moments when I wanted to, because it's tough out here. But you know, They were good parents about it. No guilt trips.
Very nice. So what was, you know, your method of finding a foothold in the industry? Like, it's one thing to move to LA to try acting, but the nuts and bolts of it, I think, are mysterious.
You know, what was that last word you said? Mysterious? I just said
the nuts and bolts of it are kind of mysterious.
They are mysterious. Yeah. You're really right. And to be honest, I think I like only truly appreciated it looking backwards and reflecting on it. Because when you're in it, like I feel very, 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 very lucky. I'm sure there's some, you know, testament to me as well. But truly, I feel like extremely lucky. And I didn't even know it at the time, because it could go a lot differently. People can't even get agents very easily out here. So luckily I was in an acting class. I did sign up and study, because I'm studious, at pretty much every acting school that I thought was noteworthy and interesting. And I just attacked it that way. And so one of my, actually my comedic coach, she said, I got to find you a manager. I got to find you a manager. I'm going to make it my personal job to find you a manager. So she submitted me to her close personal friends, and one instantly took me on. And then I don't know, I lucked out like big time, you know, didn't realize it until after the fact. Because yeah, I don't know what it would have been like to be out here 3 years and have not booked anything, or, you know, been able to actually do what you're trying to do. That's very disheartening. And I give people that do that a lot of credit, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, did you have any day jobs at that time when you were trying to, you know, break into the business?
I mean, I did probably had so many. Oh yeah. So I tutored SAT math. I tutored, algebra, geometry, pre-calculus. I think I did calculus, and I was like, I don't know if I should be doing this. And, I tutored a lot of Spanish. So I taught kids Spanish. That was kind of my day job, to make some extra money. Did the production company for a little bit. What else did I do? Oh, I was a host. I really was just a host at a restaurant, not Vanderpump Rules, not Sir. I'm talking like Little Dom's or Dominic's back in the day. I don't know if you remember that restaurant. But I think I was a host more to meet people and make friends, because the simple exchange of greeting people as they come into the restaurant, I mean, I understand it's, you don't, it's not the most, you don't need, you know, a supercharged IQ to do it, but it's truly so satisfying and, you know, nice and social. So I was a host for a little bit as well, which brought in some money.
Mm-hmm. So if I have this correct, your earliest TV credit is an episode of Las Vegas, which starred daytime alums Josh Duhamel and Vanessa Marcel. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Okay.
So what do you remember about being on that set and just getting that first job?
Nothing. Literally, I don't even remember my character. Well, I guess it was probably a co-star. It was a very small role, right?
Yes.
I don't remember that one so much, probably because I was so maybe nervous, and it was like just a big rush, and you're like, what the heck is this? And it's a TV show. I think I just had a few lines. I don't know. I remember being happy about it, but I don't remember much about that one. I remember Entourage. I remember.
Well, what do you remember about Entourage? That was like a huge show to be on.
Kevin Connolly. I remember Kevin Connolly. He was a little, it was almost like a hazing process. He was a little, he must be from Boston. Is he from Boston? I think.
I don't know.
I feel like he's from Boston. So he like wanted to switch the schedule around, and then that was cool. And then Doug, do you remember Doug Ellen? He was one of the either writers or creators. Mm-hmm. He wanted our characters to be love interests. And then I think Kevin thought, I don't know what he thought. He gave me a really hard time. We bumped into each other a lot socially later, and we became friends. But I think he, I don't know what, you know, actors have egos. That's all I'll say.
You heard it here first. Breaking news.
Doctors have egos.
Yeah. But I remember that being a really cool set to work on. And the writing was cool. And the whole crew and everyone was really amazing. And that was a fun experience. But that was like, that was more lines. That was a little juicier. And we were talking about a recurring and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You made your daytime debut not terribly long after this quick gig on Las Vegas in 2007 when you were first hired to play Heather. So tell us how the YNR gig came about.
That felt like a really good blessing too. Like I, when I look back, so I was engaged. Okay. I was engaged very young and was very, very innocent, and it ended, it needed to end, and it ended. And the next week, and I, you know, he are, was, you know, I didn't know a lot of people in LA. He was kind of my life, you know? And then the next week I got offered this role and I was like, this is fantastic. I'm just going to dive into this. This is wonderful to, spend my time and shift. And I think it was so incredibly lucky and healthy and wonderful. And at that time, I don't think everything was on YouTube, was it?
Correct.
So there was like a lot, there was like a really safe space to learn and get your feet wet and, you know, really learn about yourself as an actor and as a person and your work process. And that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, what are your standout memories of just being a newcomer on the YNR set?
Honestly, I remember Groz the most, and I look back and I'm not sure how many scenes we had together, but we just had so much fun and like a really good connection as friends. So I think I just remember how comfortable when I was a newcomer, how comfortable everyone was because they had been there so long, and confident and playful people were, you know? And I do remember it was really lovely. I got in a car accident actually on my way home from set. And I was so, it was so heartwarming. The next day there was this really, really like lovely, beautiful, huge bouquet to make me feel better, from CBS and The Young and the Restless and Sony. So that was lovely. I kind of remember being like, what? Like, I didn't expect that. Like, I thought I would be fired and replaced the next day because I smashed my face, you know, and they kind of waited for my face to heal and, were really patient and loyal and lovely. And I remember that surprising me. Like it felt personal and that was lovely. Yeah. But as far as set goes, it's intimidating when you're walking in with these people who've been on there for like 10, 15 years. I do remember Crystal was pretty cool because she'd done it since she was like a kid. And I just admired her so much for being so responsible and taking charge of her life and such a professional at such a young age. That was really different to see from my walk of life, which is like high school, college, this, you know, I admired that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Heather, of course, was a legacy character because her father on the show, Paul, played by Doug Davidson.
Doug is amazing. Doug was like a second. He like took the fatherly role in real life too. He was such a warm, protective, loving energy on set, reassuring. I hope he comes back.
So do we.
Yeah.
Now, did you ever struggle with any of the legal jargon that came along with playing an attorney?
At that time, no. I think, you know, you're young, you're sharp, your brain, Princeton, used all this technical stuff. That was fun. That was easier than I expected for me. I mean, it's a mouthful sometimes, but that part I feel is well suited to me, luckily.
Yeah, not everyone who comes into daytime television playing a lawyer had just been tutoring the SATs, you know, months earlier.
Right. Yeah, like it's a muscle. So it was within shape.
You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of someone who's relaxed on set and probably someone who's joking on set, in the courtroom, you often intersected with the character of Michael Baldwin, played by Christian J. LeBlanc. Yes. What are your memories of working opposite him?
He is a sweetheart as well. I mean, he was probably still is. Him and Greg actually are two of my favorite people I worked with. And it's, I mean, he's it all. I don't know. He's extremely helpful. He makes you feel safe, not zero judgment, just really about getting the best work. And he's so humble and he's very, very talented at how quickly he can rattle off everything and have, you know, pizzazz and humor and sharpness. And yeah, he's phenomenal. He's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of Heather's love life, we saw her involved with Kane, played by Daniel Goddard. What do you remember about working with him?
Let me think. Yeah, I remember he had an accent, so I always had to try and break down the accent and try and understand specifically what he was saying. So I had like that filter on it, you know? He was a very hard worker. I always respected that about him. Him and Heather, they didn't quite get along so perfectly. I think I really remember how hard of a worker he was. Yeah. And how seriously he took his job, which is an admirable quality.
Yeah. So I think for the majority of the time that you were in the role, Heather was romantically linked to Adam. And there were two Adams that you worked opposite. The first was Chris Engen and the second was Michael Muni. So what stands out to you about working with them and dealing with a recast and also just building the Heather Adam relationship in general, which I feel like really popped at the time?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then so Michael ended up turning blind, right? Okay. Like when he was playing.
Correct. Adam,
right. Yeah. Chris was amazing. I'll start first chronologically, right? Cause he had the role first. One of those really out there artists and people that beats to his own drum. Very, very high ethical, moral high ground. Couldn't give a, you know, whatever. I don't know if we're allowed to curse on this thing. You know, what anybody else thinks whatsoever, but is just such a truly solid, good person. That being said, I think that's why he was like, and, you know, don't need to be in daytime because I'm going to go probably build a spaceship in the desert. Who knows? And, you know, start the coolest cult you've ever heard of. But like, he's a pretty cool person. He's just like, he's a little irreverent in a way that was really interesting, but he is very accessible as an actor, very compassionate. It's very easy to work with him. If he wants to work, he could work. He's so great to work with. It's like you mainline the connection with him. You know, professionally, like he's so available. So that's great. It was really great to work with him. And then Michael was amazing. It was definitely, they look very different, right? So, you know, you have to sort of weld it that it's the same character. And obviously there's different work chemistry with one person than another person. They look completely different. So it feels like two different things. And it's really just your choices that you craft beforehand that will kind of weave it together.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's great is with different people, different stuff like spontaneously comes up. And that's kind of those gems in acting that you live for. And I'm sure what the audience lives for, because you can see it when it fires completely spontaneously throughout the scene and it like becomes alive and is born through the scene, hopefully on take one, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now you mentioned Graz, who is of course Michael Graziadei, who plays Daniel, someone that you also worked with back in the day, probably less so than you do now in a way. But what do you remember about him from besides being wonderful when you first started?
I mean, everyone's talented, but he truly is probably the most talented of anyone I've worked with, I think. I love how he works because he really runs lines. He will rehearse and rehearse. He's similar to me in that, you know, you can read something, but until it's out your mouth and you're working it out and you're playing off of someone, it doesn't really kind of set in. Like there's only so much work you can do until you start running the lines with someone. Some actors can just read it and then that's all they need. But he's similar to me in that, like, we both like to run lines a lot and we're very helpful to each other. What I remember about him back in the day is just very, very playful and can make anyone laugh, and he's clever and he's witty. So he's just a fun time on set, you know? And then he's still the same now, but like we both have babies and we both talk about kids. So there's a lot more to relate to, but, like I'll run his lines even if he has a scene, you know, with a different actor that I'm not in, and he'll do the same for me. It's kind of great. It's a good work relationship. He's just so, I don't know. He's so down to earth and cool and fun.
He was fun when we had him as a guest on the podcast. Yeah, I loved him.
Like he's going to shock you and he's comfortable in his own skin and he's got his own thing going on and he's witty. But I can see him in any forum. I think that's why he's had a lot of success and he's done a lot of different things. I think he really appreciates YNR and I he could, and he does do a lot, but I think he really loves YNR, but he can really cross into different genres. Mm-hmm. And he brings so much personality and like natural, like a natural texture to literally everything he says on camera, which is, makes the other person's job easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I remember it being like a big shock, for a lot of reasons, you know, in our industry when the show decided to recast Heather in 2010 with Eden Riegel. But how did you feel about that and about leaving the show?
Well, I remember, well, I was kind of friendly with Eden. So I was a bit surprised. Like we had just she went to Harvard, right? Or was it Yale? No, I think she went to Harvard.
Harvard.
Yeah. So, I mean, aside from the fact that I was blonde and petite and she's like jet black hair and like, you know, well endowed, it's just, it was physically like the exact polar opposite. But I was surprised because we were trying to find a job for her to come over, me and Lizzie Hendrickson, because of our social circle, we were becoming closer friends. So I was shocked when she took my role, you know, but I was happy for her. You know, I tend not to be jealous. I don't really think that serves anything. And everyone has their own journey and path in life. And truly, like, I'm not burdened with a lot of innate jealousy. So I was happy for her because I knew she wanted it. Just was surprised it was for Heather. And it was a big jump from like my version of Heather, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And doesn't look anything like Doug either, but you know.
Right. Right.
Oh, well. Well, yeah. We can at least say it wasn't one of the more successful recasts in daytime history.
Correct.
Right. For sure. Yeah. After YNR, you did episodic on primetime shows like Castle, for instance, and then you popped up in the third season of the Bravo reality series, Vanderpump Rules, which of course has come roaring back into the zeitgeist this past year, including re-airing your season, you know, recently. But
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah. Ever since Scandoval broke, they have started re-airing all the seasons. So first of all, how did you wind up on the show?
So I actually hung out at Sir quite a bit. Like two of my closest friends were at the time, servers there. They weren't in the forefront of the show. They might sometimes be in the background. So I was always hanging out there. Danielle, Madison, they're like sisters to me. They're working. Tiffany was another friend. She's best friends with Lisa Vanderpump's daughter. She was working there. Christina Kelly is their best friend. So, you know, we were all there. I was really just eating and hanging out. But one of the EPs actually went to Princeton. So he was like, why don't you just, you're here all the time. We really do need someone who could, hope I don't get sued, who could very convincingly, naturally, seamlessly kind of catch the new viewers up to speed on the history without it looking expositional, you know? Because there's people that are jumping into the show and they don't know the backstory. And a lot of the actors on the show, a lot of the stars of the show don't necessarily know pacing or how to catalyze a scene or an arc of how to wrap it up, you know, and then they were getting these scenes that were like rolling on for like 12, 14 minutes. And like, how do you cut that together? So he asked if I wanted to just come, you know, hang out with my friends, but just kind of do stuff to help from a more traditional theatrical point of view, like move the scene along, give it an arc, catalyze, so there can be a start, finish, and an end. Yeah. And then also if things come up to feign innocence and genuinely ask questions, because I didn't know a lot of the drama. I had never seen an episode of it. I would steer clear of a lot of the drama that I would see erupting in the restaurant. You know, go in my corner and meditate or something.
Right. Well, no, do you recall whether you had like reservations about this notion of like playing yourself on TV, if you will?
You know, what's really great is you have no reservations when you have no freaking clue what you're walking into. I'm writing anyway. I don't know if I'm going to be acting anymore. I really like writing. And if it comes back to bite me in the ass, I'll use a pen name. It's all good. Vail Bloom is done with her acting career. What's the big deal? Who cares? And then I think while I was airing on Bravo, I think like a film on 35 millimeter with John Hawkes and Robert Forster came out that I never thought would see the light of day. And then suddenly acting started coming back and I was like, ooh, I did not plan for this. I kind of like to be irreverent towards glass ceilings. And I think it's really great where we're at now in the industry is nobody is in a box anymore. And there used to be boxes for sure around what you could do and what you could transition from. So I think I did it a little sooner than was comfortable. I got a lot of slack for doing that from agents, managers, other people. But now I think it would be no big deal. You know, we're in a different spot today than we were then. So, yeah, all good.
Mm-hmm. All good. Looking back now, what would you say were the highs and lows of that experience?
The high was, I think that they portrayed me pretty well. The low was realizing how many freaking people watch this show. Like I had no idea how many people watch this show. And I don't know if I would have done it if I realized that, but I sort of put blinders on sometimes because like, I don't even want to know because I don't want it to change whatever my choice is. That was a little bit of a shock. But it has become a whole machine. I mean, Lala has built a beautiful business. And, you know, I think you can really use it to launch yourself. And I think it's great. Lala did not want to do it. She replaced me and she's really nervous about it. And, you know, and now then she made the most of the role in her life and launched. I mean, she's a personality and she's a businesswoman now, which is great. Yeah. I like that element of it. Everyone's launching their own businesses. I think that's cool. Yeah. Yeah. They offered me my own reality show at Bravo. But I said no.
About you? Like about your life?
I don't want to be Vail Bloom. I need a script. It's much more comfortable playing someone else than playing yourself on television. And that didn't even feel like playing myself because like I knew what I had to do. I had a function. I had a job. I wasn't actually a host. I didn't get a paycheck from Sir. I got a paycheck from the production company. But everyone else genuinely got themselves into that much trouble. That was authentic.
Yeah. So I'm curious, like, I feel like no one, you know, with a smartphone and a television or a computer could have gone through 2023 without seeing the explosion of the show into pop culture. So was that a strange thing for you when all of a sudden it was on the tip of everyone's tongues again?
When it re-upped, I think it's a funny thing. There's people that, so I was just at a fifth birthday with my daughter and maybe like 2.5 hours into hanging out with the moms, drinking rosé in the kitchen while like, you know, there's like kids outside, safe, you know, activities, etc. She was like, and I just have to ask you, like, huge Vanderpump fan. I was like, well, how did, she's like, I've been trying not to. I was like, is this what people do? Like, I think there's only a certain personality type that just goes for it and says it. So what my experience is, right, my sample size is not that many people talk to me about it. But then I realize when they do talk to me about it, they've been thinking about it the whole time. So I don't know. it definitely had some sort of and it's kind of epic. It's what, 10th season now? Like, what is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good run. Like, I got to respect that for anything. I think the vibration on the show was like a different vibration, a little lower frequency. But like, then you're like, oh, it's become this whole thing. It's 10 seasons. That's a thing. That's it. Not quite the institution that it's like a 50-year anniversary. But right. 10 years of anything is cool on television.
It is. And they got, you know, the Scandoval definitely was a boost because it became something, a show for people who didn't even really know about it. Those people who you wanted to be there, the ones who didn't watch it, they suddenly now knew about it too.
Super.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Perfect.
So yeah, just so you know, Vail, you could turn Bravo on like a random Tuesday afternoon and you might find season 3 of Vanderpump Rules.
Oh, great. Thank you for the heads up. I did think it was weird that my cousin, who's now like in medical school, was like, hi, how are you? Miss you. All my friends at school are starstruck. They're fans of Vanderpump. I was like, that's weird. you're helping explain that one for me.
Well, in recent years, you've worked behind the camera as well as a producer. So tell us about that.
I love producing. I really like doing ground up and like developing something. I think that is more gratifying. Before I even did those credits as a producer, I was doing other projects where I was getting it like, you know, with a lot of red tape, already cast up, director, lost that director, need another director, seven producers attached. You know, it's a lot about that's fine. I'm good at that, but it's not necessarily my favorite. I don't enjoy that type of producing as much. It's a lot of putting out fires. It's kind of counterintuitive if you're in that space to art and creating. So I have had to experience being a producer and then also playing a role. So like managing a set and then also having to switch off and, you know, be in the film. And those are two completely different headspaces because one's like really good at handling one's feeling and freedom, you know? But I like it. I think ideally I think I would like to, if I'm producing like a smaller supporting rather than a lead role, because if I'm really going to actively produce on set while we're in production, I'd rather not be on set every day having to, you know, worry about my performance, because there is a lot of like ushering in chemically, energetically, how you prepare to be in that completely fluid space to act. If I was producing something from ground up, which I do have a couple of things I'm still producing, we'll see if they ever see the light of day, you know, COVID and then now strike, who knows, but I'm sure they will at some point. I just would have to have everything handled before I act in it, you know? And I really do believe like, I want what serves the story most rather than a vehicle for myself, because I like stories. Mm-hmm. So if it works that I'm a lead in it, I'm sure there will be something like that at some point. I think I'm just going to have to hand off the active, you know, onset producing.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you've also been very busy, I have to imagine, with your family in recent years. As you mentioned, you're a mom now. You have a beautiful son and daughter. So I'm curious, your youngest was born early in 2020. And how did you navigate having a newborn, an older child you were helping navigate, adjusting to having a sibling? And yeah. Then, hey, global pandemic on top of it. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to put myself in your shoes.
Yeah, I think I, you know, pathologically always look for the silver lining, which can, you know, be a positive and also probably like annoy some people. But it was like when you first have a baby, you want to be, you should, dare I use that word, should be home as much as possible to be with your newborn. So I think in that way, it really carved out and held space just, you know, because of the conditions for my son and I to spend a ton of time at home together, bonding and really, really anchor that in all of those ways that's important, you know, developmentally for a child. I can tell you every kid's different, right? Like even if I did the exact same thing with one child as I did with the other, every child has their own unique disposition. But my daughter is like beyond social, says hi to everyone, says like 2.5 years old, she's like, hi, sweetie, to the doggy. You know, we used to stroll up and down Abbot Kinney multiple times a day. And she was so used to foot traffic and meeting everyone. Whereas my son, I mean, I think I was like masking to walk out the door and avoiding talking to anyone. So he was a lot more timid. So I think that really showed up later. But, you know, now has sort of evened out, right? Like a COVID baby is a lot more shy. Like I remember the first time my friend sang happy birthday for me, it's at my friend Bella's house and my kids were over there and it was maybe like 8 or 9 of my girlfriends. And at that point I realized it was November. I think, you know, he was born in January. The sound of multiple people singing together scared the hell out of him. And he just started crying. And I was like, oh, this is a product of not being socialized. So there's a beautiful mother child bond, and then the socialization had to happen later, and it's all working out. But I'm a germaphobe, like truth be told. So like, yeah, I'm super OCD and germaphobe. So I think when you have a baby, you're even more that way, right? So I just had an excuse to be that way. So there was that, you know. Obviously, it's hard to
get ahead of the curve.
Yeah. So it all worked. It was a lot to process just emotionally, but you know, and like socially what's going on, and everyone had there was a lot of pain and a lot of loss. Right. But, as far as just managing the babies, that part wasn't actually so bad. My daughter was 18 months when he was born. So I cannot believe how close they are in age.
That's close.
More just like managing the normal things. Like one's not walking, one's getting out of diapers, one, you know, there's a lot of stairs in my house, you know, just like the normal stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's dig into your Y&R return. So how did you find out that they wanted to bring Heather back, and were you surprised?
I was surprised, so pleasantly surprised. Like, well, how do you feel about that? And I was like, I feel good. I feel really good. So when are we going to wrap this? Are we going to formalize this? Like, that sounds great. he was just really relaxed about it. And it was just a really positive, like organic, natural, it was so nice. It was so nice to get the call. Definitely didn't expect it. Just because it had been so long, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't get the vibe from you that you're particularly prone to nerves, but were you nervous like the night before the first day back?
Was I nervous? I mean, I couldn't find my way around the stages, you guys. I was like, oh, like it hasn't been that long. I should know what stage to go to, where makeup is. So that was just trippy. You know, but I don't know if it's accurate or if it's my level of appreciation, but I swear everyone is like 10 times nicer and more humble and more helpful this time around. And I don't know if that's, we've all been through it and we've seen the industry change and we've all been through a pandemic, or if it's just that I'm grown up now. So like I can see and register this stuff and really appreciate it. But everyone was nice the first time, but like this time I'm like, everyone's been so lovely from crew to actors to producers to everyone, like literally every single person, makeup, everybody. I'm like, this is such a great place. We're in such a good space. The show is like a very beautiful place to work and be right now for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even the stage manager, like everyone is just so positive and cool and respectful and professional. It's really nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do get nerves. I think I wasn't nervous. I was more nervous, honestly, for this interview. I got to be honest. I'm not even kidding. Like I had a cup of coffee and I had to order like chamomile tea afterwards. Cause like, I don't know what's going on. I'm like nervous. I have something in my gut. I feel too sped up. I think this is called anxiety.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good. You immediately put me at ease when you guys were talking in the beginning. It calmed me down. So thank you.
We could try to be more intimidating as we go on. If you'd like to just justify the emotion.
No. It wasn't in vain. Don't worry. I think so. We got
to know. Well, did you find Heather again easily? Like, was it easy for you to tap back into her or did it take a minute?
Yeah. She's a really like badass character. Like she's a strong woman. It's very easy to respect her. I'm proud. I'm really proud to have her storyline. I think she is a good role model for women. I love that she was an independent, idiosyncratic character without always having a man attached to her. When I first played her, I mean, I felt like I didn't even have a kissing scene or a love scene for like what felt like the longest time on daytime. You know, like she really has a full character. I love that there are, you know, romantic notes and she's getting to explore relationships. I think that's wonderful, but she's just easy to be proud about, like, you know, so it was easy to dip into her. I think because when you're not judging the character, right? Like you should never judge anything you're doing in acting, right? That's death to acting, right? Can't judge, even if you're playing a, you know, criminal, you can't judge the character, right? Cause you have to serve the role. But it's just, I respect her character a lot. So it's very easy for me. There's no blocks that I have to kind of remove, you know?
Well, as you mentioned earlier in the interview, one of the relationships that's become primary is that of her non-biological, but definitely her daughter, mm-hmm. Lucy. And mm-hmm. What a lovely young actress they found to play her, Lily yes. Brooks Ryan. So you're getting to do that facet of the character. Tell us about working with Lily.
Lily's great. We like text each other pictures of our manicures back and forth. We have this. So I think she talks to some of the makeup artists and she's like, no, you, the kids aren't saying that anymore. But to me, she knows I'm like too far removed. So she doesn't even, she's just so nice. Like, I think, what did we say? I don't know. There was some, like slay. I don't know. Like the kids were saying, slay. I don't know. And someone with me, she kind of, you adopt a little bit of that nurturing, playful, friendly dynamic in our real life. So She's adorable. I want to go to one of her shows to support her music. And she's a sweetheart. Yeah, mm-hmm. She's really impressive to work with, especially for her age. It's shocking. She greets everyone with confidence and respect, introduces herself, says it's an honor to work with them. And she's definitely a little adult for sure.
I love that.
Yeah. And she's really vulnerable. Like I was watching, you know, obviously I'm in the scenes with her some of the time. And then I'm watching how it translates. It translates really well on screen. She does amazing in person too. And I was impressed in person acting with her, but then I saw even more so how it translates on screen. She has a really beautiful vulnerability to her.
That's great. Now, your first visit back was short. Did you know that there was more to come for Heather? And how did you feel if you didn't when you found out there was?
I didn't know there was more to come. I think I was hopeful because it was so fun. It felt like being home or like, you know, with family going back to YNR. So, and I realized how fun it is to act. So, I don't know, let me think. Oh, I had done a movie in February, but like really because of the pandemic, I hadn't really acted in a few years, you know, or a couple of years, I don't know. Bar like one thing. And I realized how much I enjoy it. So that was great. I was more building a brand and a business. So I wasn't as focused on acting and there wasn't as much work. I just realized this is still a part of me and I love it. And so when they called for more, I was very thankful. Yeah.
Well, she has not chosen an easy task, right? Because she has chosen to defend Phyllis.
Yeah.
Without working with Michelle Stafford this time around.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a titan. I mean, that's one of the people that comes to mind when I'm thinking like she was always nice and friendly, but maybe because I was younger, I was intimidated. And now meeting her at this stage, she's phenomenal to work with. And there's some exciting nuances coming up between her character and my character. Like Michelle and I have some really interesting stuff coming up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to defend her, I mean, holy cow. However, literally, she's so convincing. Like she's so persuasive. I don't know how, if she's been playing Phyllis like this all the times in all of her scenes, like she was with me, she could manipulate anybody. I totally understand how it happens. It's impossible not to be. She's so convincing. Mm-hmm. Like I was like crying when she was just talking. Like, Vale, you're playing her lawyer. You cannot tear up right now. Not good for the character. Hold it back. But I'm like, wow, what she's saying, you know, like really gets me. You know? So she's awesome.
Mm-hmm. What about Laura Lee Bell, who plays Christine?
What's really cool about Laura Lee and I working together is there's such a dynamic to enter into the conversation, right? With our storyline that, you know, because of Paul and their separation, and she is obviously devastated. That's a very big, real, hot note for her. And so to then introduce being professional and adversarial, like, you know, we're adversaries. Like, it's just, that's so many layers, which is really interesting to play with as two actors. And she's, I mean, she won't even let, as an actor, it's really amazing, or as a human, she won't even let, like, she helps out prop, she helps out everyone, she doesn't expect people to do things for her, she's just so down to earth and lovely. I mean, she's a true joy. I mean, it's just, you know, knowing her family and everything, like, it's extremely impressive the way she treats every single human on set with, like, the utmost respect and makes everyone feel special. And she's great. She also runs lines a lot, which is very helpful for me, too. So we like to run, and I love our scenes coming up.
Well, what is your take on, like, how Heather feels about Daniel these days and feels about him moving on with Lily?
Back to Laura Lee and Christine, the one thing I did notice this time, I was like, we look the same age. She has not aged. So I was like, I was like, wait, you were, you know, with my dad and I'm, so we should look a little bit different, but you've not aged even a second. So we kind of like have this median situation going on. But so that's just like compliments to her genes. And I think her mother was like that too, you know, like never aged. But moving on to, we're talking about Daniel.
Lily and Daniel. How
Lily and Daniel. See, I'm already upset and I'm not even playing Heather right now. I'm already like, oh, Lily and Daniel. I think it's super fun. And there's a lot of fodder there that they've reconnected. It's unfortunate timing, though, you know, so we'll have to see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm. Well, it feels like the YNR audience is really embracing having Heather back in town. Certainly Mara and I are. But what does that positive response mean to you?
It means the world to me because, I mean, we only do it for the audience. I mean, partially for ourselves, right? But it's a symbiosis. Like we can't exist without the audience's happiness. I'm extremely thrilled if the audience is welcoming Heather back into town. That would make me very, very, very happy. Yeah. She can stir some stuff up, but yeah. like in the sweetest, most ethical way.
Sure. Of course.
With self-respect, you know?
Yeah, no problem. easily accomplished on this though.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we let you go, is there anything that you would want to say directly to those YNR fans who are so celebrating the fact that you and Heather are back in Genoa City mix?
To all the fans who are happy to see Heather again, I don't read a lot, but I have read a little bit. And it's so truly, truly, truly wonderful to see your support, and I can't thank you enough. It means probably more than you guys will ever know. It feels so perfect to be spending a little time back in Genoa City, and I will do my very, 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 very best to make you guys happy and entertained and engaged. And please keep watching, and thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Well, that is perfect. This has been such a great chat. I'm happy. We did right by you. Thank you for all your time today.
We didn't even need to finish the chamomile tea.
That's right. All good. Easy. Well, I could talk to you separately for an hour about Vanderpump Rules, but I won't. But anyway, we appreciate everything today, Val, and look forward to everything you're going to be doing in Genoa City.
Yes. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for your time and have a good day.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Vale Bloom for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.